We present the Sound of Football podcast, a ride on the football fairground.
People watch Match of the Day because they want to see the Premiership goals. They don't watch Match of the Day because they want to hear pearls of wisdom, like you know, dribbling down the tune of Alan Shearer.
That's really great. Like, it's really the worst. That's the worst thing I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, dear.
Oh, my goodness. Right, sorry, carry on.
Well, we're halfway through the podcast.
Nothing that 6 weeks of therapy can't put right, I'm sure. Yes, welcome everyone. Another edition of The Sound of Football Beckons. I believe it's episode 56, for what that's worth. And, well, once again, we're sticking to the same old formula. Me, Chris Oakley, along with my two wonderful cohorts, Terry DeFellan and Graham Sibley. Welcome, Terry and Graham.
Hello.
Hello.
Now then, this week, as we're recording now on Monday evening, we've got Champions League and Europa League matches to look forward to once again. Several English teams in action. We're going to use that as an excuse to sort of shoehorn in a bit of a review, really, thus far into the Premier League season, just to sort of assess how well those teams involved in Europe are doing so far, really, if that kind of makes sense. I think we'll save the advanced explanation. We'll sort of start off, I think, by looking at... Well, let's look at Arsenal, for what it's worth, Graham. Give you a chance to sort of lead the way. Now, Arsenal last week had a rather splendid win over... had a splendid win over Braga in the Champions League. Excellent win for what that was worth, given Braga's marauding antics in previous rounds, beating teams like Celtic and so on and so forth. But I know one or two people have recently been levelling the accusation at Arsenal that essentially the reason they do so well in Europe is because they play against teams that essentially don't know Arsenal very well, don't get the chance to see Arsenal regularly. But then when Arsenal revert back to playing in the Premier League, they're playing against teams that they've been playing against year in, year out, and kind of know Arsenal. Hence, he said, simplifying things dramatically, while you had the result between Arsenal and West Brom at the weekend, where West Brom won 3-2. Do you think that kind of holds any water, Graham?
I don't think it does, really. I think I don't think it's a question of a case that English teams know how to play against Arsenal, because if they did, then
Arsenal would be relegated.
A lot more games, yeah. I think, you know, the West Brom result, yes, it was a big surprise. I mean, like, to go 3-0 down at home, yeah, that's a real shocker. Hmm. I don't think it's not, you know, oh dear, this is what Arsenal really are once you scratch the veneer. I think, yeah, it was a weaker side, I suppose you could say.
Yep.
And you know, under strength through basically moving players around, and also, you know, obviously the injuries are well documented. Mm. But you know, fair play. I mean, like, West Brom went out and won, and you know, Arsenal didn't look as if they had any idea what to do when they were 2-0 down. Yes, they did bring it back to 3-2 at the end, but. Yeah, a disappointing result for all Arsenal fans. And I think, really, I mean, it just highlights a lot of the problems that Arsenal have, in the fact that, you know, they've got a very inexperienced defence now. They brought players in, but, you know, when you've got two brand new centre-halves, they're new to the Premier League as well as new to each other, then, you know, I think you're always going to have problems there of communication, even though the whole back four now does speak French.
Well, just to jump,
and of course, yeah. Sorry, of course, there is always the problem about the goalkeeper. Now, Munir has yet again shown that he's seriously is not up to the task, and you know that he's got he may be able to do it, but his confidence is shot. So, and unfortunately, like, you know, Wenger is stuck with him and Flappy Jansky until January. So. Yeah, bring Mannone in, that's what I say.
Well, indeed, give him a crack of the whip, I reckon. Yeah, absolutely. And Arsenal this week, in fact, it may even be, let's see, I'm just looking at my list here. Are they playing tomorrow night or is it Wednesday night? Oh, it's tomorrow night, isn't it?
It's Tuesday, yeah. We're playing away to Partizan Belgrade.
Partizan Belgrade, and what do we know about them, and what do you reckon on their chances?
Well, Partizan Belgrade, they've been Serbian champions for the last 3 years. I think they've only dropped 2 points all season. So very, very strong in the Serbian league. Nothing really to write home about in Europe, though. And you know, Arsenal should be looking to get at least a point over there, probably to try and sneak a 1-0 win. But given the defensive frailties at the moment, I think it's going to be a lot tougher than that.
Right. And I mean, just to sort of draw a line under the whole kind of Arsenal section of the conversation, I mean, they find themselves third place at the moment in the Premier League after 6 games, and they've only lost one of those 6. So, I mean, not a bad start. It's only that West Brom game that they have lost so far. So, I expect you're quite happy with that, the way things are.
Well, certainly not too concerned. I mean, I think the draw at Liverpool felt like drop points. You know, going in half time with a man to the good, and then you know, then conceding so quickly after half time, that was disappointing. But it's not been a bad season. But the unfortunate thing is yet again unable to put out our strongest team. Starting with Van Persie and Fabregas, coming back into the team after a busy World Cup, and now without both of them. And without Walcott when he hits form, and it's really disappointing when you see that happening. It looked quite good. It looked like Arsenal had got a bit more depth to them this season, but I suppose you can't really legislate for injuries, but in which case you can't really build your team around Robin van Persie at the moment, because you just can't rely on him to play 20 games in a season, let alone 30 plus.
Yeah, I suppose you have to make use of him while you got him, kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, well, Terry, I'm going to come to you now to discuss Manchester United, if that's all right with you. Mm-hmm. That's all right, as a sort of specialist subject. Manchester
fan,
United
obviously.
Are playing on Wednesday away to Valencia. And, of course, their first game, Manchester United's that is, in the Champions League, was a tame 0-0 draw against Rangers. Now, how much of a surprise is that? I mean, I suspect Man United were, to some extent, a victim of the tactics of Rangers in that they played a very defensive game and literally went there not to lose. But just how much are Man United in something of a malaise at the moment? Is this just a sort of brief spell, or do you think there's something more sinister going on there?
I'm not sure. Last season, Rooney was probably their key player, but they're certainly their catalyst, wasn't he? Superb, lots of goals, leading the line. But obviously, this season he's off the boil, he's off form. There's all kinds of sort of reasons speculated as to why that might be, many of which involving all kinds of shenanigans. But it may just simply be that he was exhausted after a very long season last season, in which he sustained an injury towards the end of last season by Munich, and then had to go into the World Cup, and has never perhaps not quite recovered himself from that. So he's been a loss. Berbatov has sort of, to an extent, picked up some of the slack on the goal scoring side, but again, whether or not you can, put so much faith in him to lead the line in the way that Rooney has done is unlikely. And apart from that, it's been Giggs and Scholes who have been magnificent for Manchester United. But
Giggs now injured, of course.
Well, indeed. I mean, I saw the game. I saw the Bolton game. I sat and watched the Bolton game, and I was very interested in it. I was mainly interested in how Bolton were playing and how Bolton were playing against Manchester United, because it was the first time I'd seen them really properly play this season. But I mean, I was sort of a bit sort of puzzled as to how Manchester United seemed to sort of lack consistent sort of attacking threat to Bolton. I was a bit. I mean, Nani, who I think is a superb player, has got a wonderful goal, but sort of drifts in and out, and and back and forth, and again Rooney was substituted, and I mean the John Champion, the ESPN commentator, was saying that he was substituted because they were looking ahead to the Valencia game. But you know, I don't know. I mean, I think 3 points at Bolton is a big deal for Manchester United. These are the games they win in order to win the titles, and it's a big. It's a big call to take your main man off, but he didn't really play terribly well, and you know, and although it would have caused an awful lot of kerfuffle, it was a reasonable and justified decision, and I think I can't remember whether or not Owen replaced him or whether Owen replaced someone else. I can't recall, but I mean, you know, it was Owen who ended up having to sort of
it was Makeda.
It was Makeda, fair enough. So I mean, the other thing that puzzled me, that struck me as well, was how Bolton, you know, managed to play their way through Manchester United relatively straightforwardly. I mean, you know, it isn't straightforward against Manchester United. They're a fantastic team with some brilliant players. But, I mean, certainly Elmander and Davies were magnificent against the two, Vidic and Johnny Evans, who I think Johnny Evans is definitely a potential player and will be a fine centre back, but you know, obviously he's inexperienced, and so he can't be expected to be all that. Now, not being a complete expert on Valencia, far from it, in fact, but if they play how I imagine them to be, then I think that Valencia will have seen that Bolton game and will take great succour from it and great encouragement from it. And know that they can play the ball through that team, and I just worry a little bit. I don't worry at all. But I mean, if I were a Man United supporter, I would be worried about their midfield.
Valencia are top at the moment in the La Liga, and they've only dropped points in one game so far, so they've got off to a flying start.
Sir Alex sacrificed a trip to Scunthorpe, believe it or not, in order to go to Valencia. I can't.
What was he thinking?
Why on earth would you sacrifice a trip to Scunthorpe to go to Valencia? Eh? Who of us would do that? Well, we know.
Well, he's had his head turned there, I tell you.
But I mean, it's a measure of. I mean, obviously, it was a straightforward, on paper and indeed on grass, it was a straightforward equation at Scunthorpe, and no reason for him to go there. But it does suggest that that their position in La Liga demands complete respect from. You know, from no less than Sir Alex himself. So it's a he must be concerned given that they haven't got those opening 3 points against Rangers, that they're going to the game in a position of weakness in which he won't like. It's for one of the more fascinating ties of the Champions League and rounds of the Champions League this round. Hmm.
Although. They are, in fact, in the Premier League still unbeaten. They've won 3 and drawn 3. I think they're one of only 2 clubs, I think, that are unbeaten so far, the other being Fulham, strangely enough. It does all seem to be kind of crumbling a bit for them. We mentioned before when Rooney sort of off the boil, Giggs is now injured. And you mentioned Berbatov, and I really kind of want to sign up to the whole thing about how wonderful Berbatov is. And he is in sort of short, sharp sort of bursts, really, as far as I'm concerned. And everyone was heaping praise on him the way that certainly, you know, the press tend to do whenever somebody sort of suddenly bursts through. And, you know, a player who was once considered a great player. But I still see Berbatov as one of those players that he plays well for a few games and then you don't hear of him for a couple of months.
If Berbatov had Rooney's ability to almost psychological ability to take the game by the scrap of the neck, combined with his talent, then you'd probably have somebody like Cantona. And I always wonder whether that was in the back of Ferguson's mind when he signed him, was whether he thought he was hopefully perhaps signing another Cantona. But he doesn't have that. I mean, from what I see, and maybe Man United supporters will disagree with this, but he doesn't have those kind of leadership qualities as a person on the pitch. I mean, I don't know him personally, obviously. I don't know what he's like as an individual off the pitch. But on the pitch, he doesn't seem to have that sort of desire to, You know, I mean, even when he scored his hat trick, he sort of like traipsed off the pitch and then traipsed into the dugout. Mm. I mean, there was none of this kind of, you know, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, I need to have a bit more passion. But I mean, you know, there wasn't that sort of, the mantle of hero didn't sit too well with him then, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm. I wonder if this whole sort of like you know, Rooney, you know, dropping form is allowing him to see more of the action. Because, you know, the rest of the team has more confidence in him than they do in Rooney.
Mm, no, absolutely, that's a good call. Yeah, it's entirely possible.
I mean, I think you called it right earlier, Terry, about what the problems with Rooney are. I think it's very easy for the press to say, oh, look, it's all the shenanigans, all the off field shenanigans that are bringing him down. But you've got to look at what he was like last season, and this is a guy who basically, you know, he carried Man United through to within 1 point of winning the title, and failed at the end of it, and we could see at the time that you know that Rooney, there was going to be nothing left of him by the time the World Cup came around, because he was busting a gut every week for Man United.
He was playing through injury as well,
and ended up scoring 34 goals.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, and ended up burning himself out. I'm sure of it. And you know, and I think it's going to take him. It's probably going to take him in the whole of this season to get over it.
Mm. Yeah, and a nice long break in the summertime, presumably to try and patch things up and his body, and then they'll be back in time for another tilt of it next year. But yeah, no, I think that's probably more realistic to sort of like see what Rooney's malaise might be.
Hmm. What he needs is a winter break, he said, lighting the blue touch paper and retiring several paces.
Yes, thank you very much, Alan.
Yeah. yes, our old friend Alan Green. Okay, well, let's open this up. The next topic of conversation is Chelsea. This is open to the floor here. Well, they did well in their first game in the Champions League this season, a comfortable 4-1 win over Žilina. And their next game, I think they're playing Marseille, are they not?
They are. Well, I think perhaps you should talk about this one then.
Oh,
Chris.
Go on then.
Yeah.
Well, it's an interesting one. I mean, Chelsea are still on fine form despite their slip up at the weekend, shall we say? But I think, I mean,
was it a slip up? I mean, or are Chelsea just flat track bullies?
I don't know. I think I must admit, I expected Chelsea to go a bit further into the season with an unbeaten run, because I just seemed to be coasting without even having to think about it the way they were up until that last game there they were playing. But I don't know. I considered it a bit of a slip up. I don't know. What do you think?
They can still win the championship and be flat track bullies, of course. I mean, certainly the evidence thus far suggests that that's exactly what they are. But of course, that's nonsense, because it was just one game and one defeat amongst so many, many, many goals that they've scored. But it'd be interesting to see how they. I'm sure they'll bounce back. They're at home. But Marseille, yeah. Chris, tell us a bit about Marseille. Can you give some Chelsea fans some insight as to what to expect against Marseille? Because certainly Jenny Redknapp won't be giving them any insight. So what are you giving them?
No, never a truer word said. Marseille started slowly in Ligue 1 this season, in keeping with their peers, really, people like Lyon, who are still struggling, and Bordeaux, who are just finding a bit of form. But Marseille are now hauling themselves up the table in Ligue 1, and they're up to, I can't remember where they were last time I looked, about sort of sixth. They're up to sixth now, so they're now playing much better than they were. But they did have this surprising defeat, it has to be said, at home to Spartak Moscow in the last round of the Champions League. And that was a game which essentially Marseille dominated. But they suffered a late goal, a goal scored by Moscow, which obviously has got their campaign off to a bit of a flying stop, you might say. And it's a bit of a surprise, But Marseille have got all these new players, you know, like Remy and Gignac and so on and so forth, some of which were injured. It seemed like every player they signed got themselves injured briefly, but I know Loic Remy's back again. Marseille had a win at the weekend against Sochaux, which any other season I would say is like, well, yeah, nothing to write home about because Sochaux are easy to beat. But actually, Sochaux this season have got off to a really good start. So actually, that's not a bad win for them. So it looks to me, in general, like Marseille are starting to find their feet. And, you know, if Chelsea aren't focused, then they might have a bit of trouble there. But I would say overall that if Chelsea being at home, if they can kind of work out what they did wrong against Man City at the weekend, then I would expect Chelsea to edge that one. Just going back to that Man City game, incidentally, somewhere on a podcast was saying towards the end of last week, Man City, I fancy them to get a result against Chelsea at the weekend. I was shouting expletives like you wouldn't believe, thinking like, how can you say that? Chelsea are in such good form at the moment and Man City are really indifferent, and yet of course proven completely wrong. But I don't expect that to be the start of any kind of bad run for Chelsea. My prediction would be that Chelsea will edge Marseille. Don't know if that kind of tallies up with what either of you think. Perhaps I don't know.
I'd go along with that.
I'd certainly defer to your certainly better understanding of Marseille. Mm-hmm. I think Chelsea at home are a difficult proposition.
I think if a French club's going to cause a surprise in this round of fixtures, I think it'll be Auxerre getting a point against Real. I think
on that would be a surprise.
That would be a bloody big surprise, I tell you. Auxerre only just climbed out the bottom three in Ligue 1, and even then only to fourth from bottom. They still haven't won.
In fairness, I mean, they wouldn't have been given a prayer against Zenit in the qualifying round, which in fact was the last game they won. So, did they win at the weekend, Chris?
So
maybe in Europe they have the appetite for the European game and they'll relish the challenge against Real.
I think Auxerre have got more chance of getting a point against Real than Marseille have got against getting a point at Stamford Bridge.
That much is true, I think. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, no, Auxerre just they haven't won yet and just in really shockingly bad form. A bit of a concern for all the top brass at the club, as it were. Keeping my eye on the manager there to see how long he lasts. But anyway, so that's Chelsea. Chelsea have got a tough patch there against Marseille, but my money's on them maybe just sort of edging that. And I mean, turning our attention towards the Europa League, I mean, we mentioned
hang on.
Sorry, have we forgotten someone?
Yes,
we have missed someone. Yes,
I knew full well I had as soon as I heard loads of in the background.
Indeed. They couldn't beat West Ham.
Oh, you're just teasing the Tottenham fans, aren't you?
Oh, all right, then. Yes, it's Tottenham, if we must.
In shocking form, of course, after their 1-0 defeat to... who was it again?
That'll be West Ham, then.
Oh, yes.
Shock, horror.
Tell us all about that, Chris.
Welcome to my podcast, everyone. in summary, I mean, I won't sort of bore you any further particularly, but just West Ham, I think, were certainly kind of on the up and starting to get their act together in the last couple of games. They've got a draw against Stoke, in which they played well at times. And not that Alan Green would have told you that on his radio commentary. And then got their first away win for like 13 months in the Carling Cup against Sunderland during the week. So good for them, good for West Ham. And indeed, if you're going to play Tottenham at any time, especially with their kind of hastily strung together defence, they had like Bessong in defence and so on Saturday, it was a good time to play them. And indeed, let's say West Ham won 1-0. You know, Tottenham in a little bit of disarray, as I remember, I think correctly, Defoe's still injured. You've got Crouch, whose form is decidedly average at the moment. Van der Vaart playing quite well, I would say. But going back to the match they played against Werder, wasn't it? It was 2-2 against Werder.
2-0 up, of course.
I mean, 2-0 up, exactly. I was just going to say, I mean, they kind of started brightly, but then kind of lost focus. And I think listening recently to one of our previous podcasts, we were previewing that game. I think the general opinion was that they might kind of not treat Werder with the respect that they were due, which makes this next game against Twente quite a fascinating one. You sort of wonder whether they have now kind of worked out what this whole kind of European football business is all about, at least Champions League in any case. What do you both feel about the possibilities of Tottenham perhaps beating Twente?
This is the hardest one to call because we know so little about... We know so little about Tottenham because of their injuries. We're not quite sure what kind of lineup they're gonna have, and I know next to nothing about Twente. I hardly watch any Dutch league, so, and they are absolute newbies in this league, so it is going to be a bit of an unknown one. They got a good result
against Inter in the first round of fixtures because they too drew to all right. That was at home,
which suggests that they're not mugs by any means. And I think when we previewed this either in this podcast or some other podcast, I think the consensus was that all of the teams in this group will fancy their chances of going through, even Twente, because there's a certain degree of uncertainty about all of the other teams. Inter have got Rafa, Tottenham are new, and Werder are score as freely as they concede. So you'll always have a chance against those teams. So, you know, Twente would go in there thinking, well, you know, if we're ambitious and, you know, we don't get intimidated, we've got a chance. So I wonder whether they'll fancy having a bit of a go at Spurs at the lane. You know, they might think, well, how hard can it be? So, we are to an extent sort of having this conversation in a little bit of a vacuum, of a knowledge vacuum, not an actual vacuum, listeners. We're not wearing helmets and floating in space.
Well, they wouldn't be able to hear us.
They wouldn't. Are you in our death screams? No, they wouldn't. You're right. They wouldn't be able to hear our death screams.
All of which goes without saying, of course. And I mean, just to kind of reflect on Tottenham's start to the Premier League season, I mean, they're now down to eighth, lost their way a little bit, and in very kind of inconsistent form. I can't remember where we kind of predicted they'd finish. I think I had them down to finish maybe about sort of, I don't know, sixth, I think, or fifth or sixth, maybe. I didn't think they were.
I don't think any of us picked them in the top four.
Yeah, no, I don't believe
I didn't,
so.
I didn't have them for top four.
No,
I think the key concern before the season started, I think, was whether they could juggle this whole sort of domestic and European campaign.
Well, I think we all agreed that they would struggle to do that, and it would seem that they are struggling to do that. And you know, I don't want to be ill disposed towards them. I mean, what they're doing is difficult. They're in the Champions League. It's great for them that they got there and they made it. They were, you know, A difficult and scary qualifying couple of games, and so, you know, they will struggle a little bit, and, you know, I think, you know, to give them a hard time is a little unfair, because, you know, it is a difficult thing to do what they're doing, and requires a bit of experience and a bit of savvy. So I'm sure they'll adjust. Whether they'll be able to come back and do it all again next year, of course, is the thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Which you suspect they won't.
Yeah, we've just got just about enough time to skim over the Europa League, and basically Man City have got it all to do. They're up against Juventus this week. Man City do lead the group in the Europa League. They're in Group A. And, Man City had a 2-0 win against Red Bull Salzburg, which was quite comfortable. I think I saw most of that game, if I remember rightly. Juventus, that's going to... I'm not quite sure even how Juventus are doing in Serie A so far this season, without sounding like Alan Shearer and unprepared.
They are blowing hot and cold, Chris. Really? They really are.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they can... They're either banging in four goals against clubs like Udinese and Cagliari, or they're losing at home 3-1 to Palermo.
So a bit like Man City in a kind of Italian sort of context.
Yeah, well, one thing you can rely on them at the moment for is goals, because I think as I said, they've scored four against Cagliari, four against Udinese, but also in the last European tie they drew 3-3 with Lech Poznan, and they've already registered another 3-3 draw in Serie A against Sampdoria. So
could be in for a few goals.
Goals flying in at both ends for them at the moment. So that could actually be a real cracker of a game. At Eastlands there, so
yeah,
I'd like to predict it.
good tremendous value that the Europa League actually does throw up in the group stages. Some really, really good sides, and some classic ties, and that's got to be one of them. City v Juve.
At the same time, Atletico are playing Leverkusen, yeah. so that would be.
Yeah, it's a difficult choice, and both of which are available on UK TV. So.
Have they got that?
ITV have got the Atleti Bayer game. Or is it ESPN? Go to thefootballfairground.com and go to our midweek TV previews, and it's on there, listeners.
I will do that.
But that game, and I'm pretty certain it's on ITV4, either that or ESPN. And Five have got the City game, so that's a definite free-to-air one for anyone who doesn't have satellite or anything like cool. that. You'll be able to tune cool. into that one free to air.
Did anyone pick up Dortmund Sevilla?
Alas, yes. Alas, no, I was about to say, but yes. Alas, yes. That's why I've booked a half an hour flexi to get home in time for 6 o'clock to watch it. That will be on I can't remember, and I don't have net access while we're talking wirelessly, so I can't check the preview, but I don't know which channel it's on.
But it's, all we'll say is just get along to footballfairground.com and look for the pointers towards our TV preview. It's all on there. Terry has very skillfully put together our midweek TV preview for this week, so all the details are on there, who's playing and on which channels and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, and finally, just very quickly, Liverpool have the chance to follow up their 4-1 win over Steaua Bucharest by playing against Utrecht in their next match, which looks like it should be comfortable, at least for anyone other than Liverpool, given their current form. Utrecht are way down in the Eredivisie at the moment, so you know, given the fact that Liverpool perhaps are raising their game for the European campaign, could be another 3 points in the bag there. Maybe
here's a debating point for us to sign off on, or to think just before we sign off is first of all to think about: is this going to be Liverpool's last European campaign for a little while?
I wouldn't bet against it. I think there's a considerable possibility of that, actually.
Because they really aren't very good, are they? I mean, no. You know, let's be absolutely brutally honest, and with apologies to any Liverpool fans listening, they really are not very good at all. They're decidedly mid-table, it's got to be said. I mean, Hodgson will turn them around and will get them playing well, but he might well get them playing well like he got Fulham playing well, and suddenly I think Liverpool's expectations are going to suddenly... The danger is they're going to shrink horribly for them over the next few months and years. As they sort their shit out. something for us all to ponder.
Ponder, yes. Yeah. Well, I dare say we'll return to the subject of Liverpool before the season's out.
No doubt.
I put money on it, in fact.
When they qualify for the Champions League at the end of the season.
That's right, yeah. Sort of the penultimate week of the season when they're sort of 10 points clear at the top of the table.
Indeed, yeah.
Yes.
And we're eating hats. lovely, lovely hats.
For now, though, I reckon we ought to bring matters to a close. So we hope you enjoyed listening to this week's podcast. And thank you very much indeed, Terry and Graham, for your company once again. Don't forget, you can go along to footballfairground.com to check out all our usual stuff, all our output. But failing that, we'll be back again, same time again next week, with any luck, for another Sound of Football podcast. So until then, thanks again for listening. Hope to have the pleasure of your company again next week. From Terry and Graham and myself, it's goodbye.
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 Join us on the Sound of Football's very own Facebook fan page at facebook.com/soundoffootball. Follow the Sound of Football on Twitter at www.twitter.com/soundoffootball. Of course, when I scream and shout and swear in public, people think I'm mad.